And that was an amazing fee, let me tell you. It lasted, that was just a little bit under or over, like an hour under 24 hours. So,
good. Now we're going to our favorite games of the year. So the best game of this year was Overwatch. So So everyone, please tell me your game of the year.
Overwatch. I'm saying it again.
It would be unfair to say anything other than Overwatch. It has to be Overwatch. I played so much this year.
Podcast done.
And not even half as much as a lot of other people. I think I have like 70 hours on it.
And yeah, I have even less, but you know, I also recognize that Overwatch is going to be a game that I'm going to be playing next year. It's probably going to be my go-to shooter. I think that it's a game that really has something for every kind of... There is some sort of character that you can find in Overwatch that you're going to like.
Yeah, I think the crazy thing about Overwatch has been that it turned so many people on to first-person shooters that otherwise would have no interest in that genre. Its appeal reaches so far outside of competitive first-person shooters, and it gets like a huge spectrum of like basically all people who would be even remotely interested in video games, and some people who don't even really play video games, like Sean, who doesn't even know what a video game is until he got on a podcast for video games and had to explain that we had to explain it slowly week by week.
Overwatch smashed our expectations and the conventions of the first person shooter genre and brought us together as brothers in a similar way that Smash Brothers perfected the fighting game for the layperson.
Oh, well, I would take out one of those words, but...
So I don't think that Overwatch really broke down. Like, they didn't do anything that was wholly unique. But what they did really is they polished everything up.
But yeah, it does combine, you know, what I wanna say, like, MOBA elements with the healer, tank, DPS, or MMO elements, and then MOBA elements with ultimates and... cooldown-based abilities, and then adds the like infinite replayability and wackiness of almost like Hearthstone-ish, like a little bit of like just random chaos and so many different possibilities per game. Like no games play out the exact same way.
Yeah, I would say that Blizzard did with Overwatch what they do with a lot of their games. In respect to the genres of those games, is that they adopted the game or genre, they wrapped it up real tight in all of their money, and then they said, why don't you get this game even a little warmer and a little cozier with all of your money, and we'll keep it fun for you.
Oh, yeah. And then I acquiesced and bought loot boxes every time they came out.
But yeah, compared to games like Team Fortress 2, it's way more. It's definitely easier to get into. It's the characters and the abilities are way more clear, and I think a lot of that comes from the fact that you learn about a character. They don't have that many abilities, and after just a little bit, you kind of realize everything that every character is capable of doing just by their silhouette, which is something that doesn't really apply to Team Fortress, where you can equip different weapons that will change what the character is capable of.
Yeah, I think that has actually been a really undersold part of Overwatch, and that is no runes, no masteries, no card loadouts, no alternate weapons, no nothing outside the game. You pick a character and you go, and the character is equally as strong as it would ever be, and it's all up to like player skill to determine usefulness and composition.
I'm so thankful for that. I think there are sometimes problems with adding complexity in those more invisible or like minute, intricate ways. I would welcome new modes and new characters and mechanics to Overwatch, but I'm glad that they don't add too many different spreadsheets or anything like that. too many surprises.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, and as for the silhouettes, that is a good thing about Overwatch. It is really easy to like identify with the characters, and they have a lot of personality, and they're designed so well from their appearance to their sound effects. Oh God,
that's another thing
I don't even think about it that much when I'm playing.
Like, I think about it so much.
He's so cool, but like it helps. It helps a lot.
I think about it so much is like the classes in Overwatch, and it's hard to even know it's something that I've considered a lot, and other than just, you know, what Sean was saying before, like wrapping the whole thing with their money and like how well everything is presented, how good it all looks, how the animations, like the effort that was put into facial animations, to the voice work, to like little touches in the game, like play of the game, highlight intros, and like emotes and win poses, adding, like fleshing out like who the characters are and what their personalities are like. It adds a little bit extra to like why you would be wanting to play a character, because you like, you know, their attitude. And not only just their kit, but also you like the different attitudes that they bring to the table. It's like shocking how also really like simplistic the characters are, and just so lovable. I don't know if it's like sort of that Pixar magic in a way where it's just animated so well and has so much love in it that even though characters like Tracer, like Tracer's thing is just that she's, you know, she's like fun and quirky and like lighthearted, but and like not, and that's not like a super deep character for the most part, but it's so instantly lovable, and like all of the animations and all of the emotes and play of the games like add to and like support that theme and that character.
Yeah, they're pretty careful and consistent within characters when it comes to designing them as like giving them an identity and a personality.
Yeah, like how they make it so that Zarya always has to have the worst clothing. They can never, ever give her a good skin.
They had a good year too. I mean, they had Halloween and they had Christmas, and Zarya still gets nothing.
Yeah, they really left her out in the cold. And when she came back in, she had a little bit of snow on her hair. And they said,
well, she had some sleeves. Nice.
Yeah, they put some sleeves on an old skin and then put some snow on her hair and then said, good to go. Patted her on the butt, said, get out there, champ.
Maybe that's purposeful, you know, hardcore players only. She's a pretty intense character to pick. Pretty serious.
At least it's not a legendary, right? Like the May skin.
Yeah.
The May recolor, the legendary recolor. But
I'm not a huge complainer, but I agree.
That is like another thing, is that the updates, I think, for Overwatch have been great. This year we got we're gonna get two maps, because Nimbani's not out yet, right? Or is it live?
It's not out.
Yeah, it's not live yet. So Anna came out.
Oasis.
Anna came out, and I love Anna. Sombra came out, and I think she needs to be tweaked, but I like the character and the design. Oasis is coming, and Eichenwald came out. So there's been and then there's been the updates. The first one was the summer games, and I think it was kind of weak, and they had the Rocket League Lucio Ball, and it was just okay. But I think the Halloween was the really good one. Like, I really loved Junkenstein's Revenge, and I hope that they find some good way in 2017 to incorporate an always active PvE mode. I don't know if they would ever want to do that, or if they want to just make it feel more special and have it be an infrequent thing, but having like an even more fleshed out legitimate mode that is like Call of Duty Zombies or something with Overwatch characters would be excellent, and a great way to like practice and play characters outside of competitive matches and quick play. And then the Christmas and winter theme kind of came out just recently, and there's a whole slew of good costumes or good skins, and two of the maps got a Christmas theme, and it looks great. And the frequent updates have been.
Was it two or three?
Three. I guess it's three if you count Eco Point, which was another new map, and that was added with like the big arcade mode, which is another thing that was added in to replace the weekly brawl and make it so that there was more options, and that also there were rewards to make it so that people would go back into it. And they added that Eco Point map for 1v1 and 3v3, and that map has Christmas lights in it, but then it's also King's Row and Hanamura. Hanamura is also the other one that has.
Yeah, they both look really good.
Yeah, they look amazing. They feel awesome to play on. They're just like so like instant. I love snow, and like that covering of snow, just for whatever reason, it just kind of relaxes me. And playing on Hanamura and King's Row, like for whatever reason, it's just cozy. It's just like nice and cozy, and there's snow and Christmas lights everywhere, and it looks amazing.
Yeah, they do a great job.
So, yeah, the best thing about Overwatch for me, you know, initially I was worried because we're used to Blizzard not supporting their games well, right?
Yeah, I was going to say that. You're right.
So I'm really relieved with the way that things have been going so far, because it seems like they realize that they can make money off of this game. And they're definitely doing it. It's working on me.
Oh, man. It is working on me. They did do an excellent job supporting this game. McCree is my favorite character, and when the game first came out, he was really, really broken. And there was like, you know, four or five different patches later, they finally got him to a place now where I love playing him, but he's not pick every game. He's not picked every single game on every team, and he's not the perfect DPS and answer to everything, but he's a little bit more situational, has more counters, but is much better. Mei was a character that was like basically non-existent and useless, and she was changed to be like very key like player in the meta now. And then recently Symmetra got a huge rework, and I've been loving playing with the new Symmetra. It's actually been like the new Symmetra is making my experience of the game better, because I firstly hated Symmetra. I hated having her on my team so much, because she was built entirely around being totally useless until she had that teleporter, which was boring to play. Anyway, it was like boring to play that character. And also you're loading so much of the character's utility onto one very tricky, easily counterable ability. Like, it was so easy for a flanker, a Tracer, or a Genji to get in the back line, or a Reaper even, and get in the back line, kill the teleporter, and then completely disable the usefulness of that character. And even when you had that teleporter up, it felt like a 5v6 because Symmetra was so useless. And the rework made her first of all terrifying, because she does much more damage, is more damage capable. Not even that she does more damage now that her tether just has a longer range, so she doesn't have to be like Eskimo kissing an enemy to be able to vaporize them. But also changed her turrets to come up quicker, to start the game with six, and more importantly gave her those two ultimates, which is the first time that has happened so far in Overwatch, where she has an ultimate that she still has her teleporter, but the teleporter is much stronger. And she now has a shield generator that gives a huge shield. And because of it, I love having her on my team. It feels actually really enjoyable to play with the shield. And then playing with the teleporter means that the game is just faster, that you get back into the action more, so that like it's actually even more satisfying that when you die, you have a 5-second respawn, and then you're immediately back into the combat. So like having her on my team has made the game more fun, and that is great. Like,
yeah, I totally agree, and I do want to say that, you know, we're talking about more recent stuff, but so much has changed with the landscape of Overwatch. I mean, like, I remember when D.Va was like, you know, awful, was never picked, and now she's like a really great character who's more fun to play than when she came out.
Oh man, I was saying that yesterday. Yeah, she like they changed the way, like they took away a lot of the unfun elements of her, made her much more tanky, made it so she's not as slow. And it's like little tweaks make these characters really pop. Like D.Va, I think, was pretty boring on launch up until recently, and now I actually enjoy her a lot. She might be like one of my favorite tanks.
Yeah, but I they're learning really fast. It's so surprising because when you think of Blizzard, you don't think of first-person shooters, but maybe now you do. And it's just like the crazy thing about Blizzard in general is just that every game that Blizzard makes is unique from other Blizzard games, and somehow they still manage to be best in class.
Yeah, and it's and Overwatch is also insane. Just the story of it, that it is I remember before it came out, I was watching this like short documentary on Overwatch and how it was Project Titan and it was going to be an MMO, a like loot based MMO, and they couldn't find the fun and couldn't really like get it to work. And there was this really like sombre tone in Blizzard at the time, where the team that worked on it was a lot of like ex-WoW people, and they were shocked. Like, we're Blizzard. We come out with the best stuff. We came out with like the greatest, most popular MMO of all time. How can't we do this? Why can't we do it again? Do we lose our magic? Like, is it not there anymore? And somehow turned
it
into...
We made the WoW.
Yeah, they made the WoW, and now they couldn't make the Overwatch, or they couldn't make the Titan. And turning that around to what it is, to like the absolute force that it was in 2006 is insane. And like I'll reiterate again that like a lot of people, like so frequently just random people I meet that play video games play Overwatch. It is permeated like game culture and outside of game culture so much that it's kind of at the point where like WoW was, where you can almost guess that someone who's playing video games probably has played or has an interest in playing Overwatch.
And I think part of that comes from the fact that it's on consoles.
Yeah, it's on anything you want it to be on, except for mobile.
Yeah, and you know that, I mean, maybe not the best metric, but the Overwatch subreddit has twice as many viewers as the World of Warcraft subreddit.
Yeah, but also, like, in a very short amount of time, it eclipsed Hearthstone, which is another, like, force in the video game industry.
Especially since Hearthstone is just as accessible as Overwatch, but it's also, like, a little bit more intimidating economically, yeah, perhaps, which totally reasonable. I totally understand that.
And even, like, little stuff, like the way that Blizzard has combated, like, hacking and... combated scripters and aimbots and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's something that I never worry about or think about. And, you know, the only other game that I can really say I never think about hacking is League of Legends.
I mean, it has it in it, sure, but...
But not that much. I mean, it's few and far between, right? I don't know if I've ever 100% seen a scripter in League of Legends.
Yeah, I guess I agree
with that. Yeah, I've never had any problems in either. I've never had any problems in either of those games.
Yeah,
I've never even had performance problems. There's like nothing wrong with that game. Even before the changes, when you guys were talking about, oh, remember D.Va, remember the changes to this and that. I mean, there were some things that were annoying in the beginning, but I mean, competitive wasn't even out, and maybe wasn't playing at a level, and I never will play at a level really where like McCree is, you know, was so dominating in the beginning. The game was just so tight to begin with. And then they found tiny ways to make it even better. And they just keep doing that. It rules. I definitely took a long break from the game, like maybe around like August, September. But that wasn't because I thought, oh, this game sucks, I'm bored. It was just like, I had played it so much, I was doing other stuff. Then I came back for Halloween, put it down for a little bit, came back like last week. I've been playing it every day for a few hours. It's awesome.
And we're probably going to play it as soon as we're done recording.
Yeah. I think for me, one of the, like, the best thing I could say about it is that when I first played it in beta, it was, like, the most fun I have had, just the most moment-to-moment fun I have had in a game, like, almost maybe ever. Like, really, it is just, like, so great how it feels to play. And just today we were playing, and I still haven't lost that feeling of, like, a good game of Overwatch for me is like, just so phenomenal and so great. And
and good games of Overwatch are pretty frequent. Almost every game of Overwatch is a good game of Overwatch.
Yeah, a lot of times it's like, if you're not having fun, then it's your fault. Like, you need to switch characters or switch up the way you're playing rather than the game itself is there's like I mean, there's times where you have people who are trolling or whatever, but that's not something I pay attention to outside of competitive. So I've been really enjoying Overwatch, especially lately, without having not even placed this season, just playing quick play and mystery heroes and stuff like that has been the most fun.
The bad games are over in like 5 minutes anyways.
True. Yeah.
10 minutes. Oh, this is horrible. This is, oh, we're done. We lost.
Maybe that's another huge thing, is like the bite-sized nature of it. Yeah, like it's super well-paced. You get into a game quickly, and then their game's like action ramps up instantly, and it stays there, and then the game's over. Like, and it doesn't feel like a long drawn out thing. It doesn't feel like something that you get stuck in for a long time. The games are like, have like a really good arc to them. They have like a perfect amount of time that you play each match that makes it a good, like, just one more rather than,
where you get to tell your Overwatch story.
Yeah,
your story about the great battle between Tracer and Reaper.
Yeah, Tracer teleports behind him, whacks him in someone. The back of the head.
Says, there you go.
Says, cheers, love. Cavalry's here.
Now, what is it now? Cheers, love. The holidays are here.
That's adorable.
There you go. It's great. I wanted to lead with Overwatch because it wouldn't surprise anybody.
Yeah. It's obvious.
Do we have any more to say on Overwatch, or do you guys want to talk about your other two favorite games of this year?
I think we can move on. I think we've talked so much about Overwatch, but do you want to close it out?
Yeah.
Seanathon?
Well, I think I just have one thing to say, which is that a lot of times when I'm hearing games from you guys, the single player games that I don't play, is I want to ask about feeling, atmosphere, unique engagement and interaction. And like, I don't necessarily think that, I think Overwatch does that in like a really light manner, where like we have like a little bit of an attachment to our favorite characters.
Oh yeah.
There's some personality and like, there's some like atmosphere here and there, like the way they made the winter levels and just the nice touches in the scenery and stuff. But I don't know. I think it's one of the first games, maybe other than Smash Bros, where like it's just a really fun game and it's still my favorite. I usually lean more towards like an extreme example, like Dark Souls 3, which came out this year. I usually lean more towards those games where like I'm really immersed and like engulfed by their world and taken into like a feeling that transcends the mechanical gaming experience. And I don't have a lot to say about that aspect of Overwatch, and yet it still just totally nails and takes me in. I think the stuff
other, you know, outside of the game, like the short videos they make are awesome.
Oh, those are amazing. Those have
continued. Yeah, it was good to make it like a comic book story too. This whole like comic book world kind of with
and
heroes.
The way that they introduced Sombra at BlizzCon wasn't a surprise, but it was really cool.
And that short is amazing. Like one of the best.
For sure. My favorite short is the Bastion.
Yeah, they go for pure fun, and that is definitely something that makes it really accessible. You don't have to tell someone that, oh, you got to be in the mood, you know, for this. You got to be into dark fantasy and think about the history of your gaming career up to this point. It's just like, nah, this game is so fun for everyone who touches it. that's all I got to say.
Cool. So let's talk runner-ups. I guess I'll start. So my first runner-up is The Witness.
Ooh, good choice.
Am I alone here?
No.
Do you have some different ones?
No, my number two is The Witness.
Yeah, so The Witness is beautiful. The Witness is the other side of Overwatch. Like, if you're going to play two games this year, I think you could play Overwatch and you could play The Witness, and you'd be kind of covered on like your single player front, on like your quiet, meditative. There's a subtle story to this game. It doesn't really expose itself. It's more about the feelings of the player and the player sort of hashing out what they think is the story, but there really is nothing concrete. And I think that it's, you know, totally on the opposite side of Overwatch, which is very like in your face about what's going on. It's wacky, it's fun, whereas The Witness is like quiet, contemplative, and beautiful.
Absolutely.
But
yeah, that's definitely that could definitely gets to what I was saying. And like, when you think about Overwatch, it's like, I did this, I had the coolest duel, and I didn't play The Witness, but I feel like when I hear about it or think about it based on like my hour experience with it and seeing it, it's like, this happens in The Witness. This cool feeling you get from The Witness. It's a different way of, I think, like, you use a different language. You get a different perspective just by the way the game is, what the game is, how it's designed and stuff. I think that's cool.
Do you mean in the way that, like, you find out about the game when it's not explicitly telling you things, like the way that you find out about the rules and the way the game works is so unique to the player, the way that that feels like a like eureka moment that almost you are alone in, that you figured it out, and that it was so complex and so simple.
Yeah,
but like,
it makes you feel very smart, and that is such a treat. It's like such a reward. It's something that I've always really liked. Just the open, unguided experience of The Witness is really cool, where it's set on this island, but you look around the island and it's full of set pieces, and anything that you see, much like Breath of the Wild, anything that you see, you can go to and explore.
Yeah.
And the thing that you know, turns a lot of people off about The Witness is the idea that The Witness is line puzzles. And yeah, there's a lot of line puzzles in The Witness, but I think it's somewhat disingenuous to say that The Witness as a whole is about solving line puzzles. Because one of the things that, you know, keeps coming up when we discuss narrative in games recently is the idea that people right now in the game industry, one of the things that they want to talk about is they want to talk about what it feels like to develop a game. And sort of like having this handbook of like, okay, so when I'm developing a game, I need to teach the players how to do like X, Y, and Z, and they need to learn it in this order. And The Witness is sort of a primer on gaming language, on how do I teach the player about their own toolkit? Because the weird thing about The Witness is that the player is sort of developing their own toolkit. Everything that you can do in the game, you're capable of doing from the very beginning. Again, the game is mostly just solving line puzzles, but by going through different areas of the game, you're picking up different sorts of knowledge that help you solve things in the game. And yeah, I think that you sort of mentioned that it's something that you see in Inside, where it's like got this kind of meta narrative to it. And I would argue that The Witness sort of has the same thing going on.
Yeah, and it's so excellently paced too. The way that you want to explore the world, and the way that that an area will frustrate you, and then you go to another area and have a revelation on something, on a rule, or on how the nature of the island and stuff like that. So that it is so subtractive to just say that it's line puzzles. For me, that was like one of the most cool experiences, just how you go around, and then the tools of the game are your knowledge, like that everything in the game is like, all the puzzles are solvable from the very outset, like you said, but you can't do it, you can't finish them until you learn these arcane rules. And it's really cool to, as you, like, you get stronger, even though you have no abilities or anything and all you do is solve puzzles, you as a player get stronger in this language as you're going through the game, and you get to the point where you're solving puzzles that have all these different rules that are interacting with each other in complicated ways, and remembering back to, like, where you learned that each of the rules from different areas. And everything is just done so well. Like, the from the individual areas, there's so many just gorgeous, like, just breathtaking areas. Like, the, like, one of my favorite was the treetop, like, canopy house, kind of like,
yeah,
a treehouse.
Tree house.
And which was amazing. I loved the swamp, has beautiful areas to it. The desert is gorgeous and has all these cool underground ruins to explore. Just every area is so unique, and it does such a fantastic job of,
yeah,
of
and
giving
it does
you
that really cool Metroidvania thing also of, you walk by a puzzle at the start of the game and you don't know how to solve it. And it's sort of like when you're playing like Metroid and you see an area where there's a hole, but it's too small for you to fit through. So you know that you need to progress through the game so that you get the morph ball, and then you come back, and it's such a good feeling to be like, yes, now I get it. Now I can go through this area. And The Witness adds another layer to it, because everything that you can do, you've been able to do all along, but it makes you feel really empowered and smart, pretty much. It makes you feel smart.
Yeah. It is really cool that the ways that a lot of other video games gate progress are these binary things. You have the ability or the weapon or the tool, or you don't have it. And The Witness does allow you to do everything, and all of that is like player knowledge. Some of the coolest thing about, like, one of the coolest things about The Witness was, like, having a book that I had, like, having a notepad, yeah, like a notebook to write different rules down and to write puzzles and try and figure them out on the notebook, and how how engaging the game is, that it made me want to do that. Like, I think a lot of other games, if I was told I would be using, like, a notepad to scribble down puzzles and to try and figure them out, or to, like, remember rules or the meanings of symbols, that I would instantly be turned off. But The Witness is something,
yeah,
that, like, organically makes you want to do
Fez
that.
I liked it in Fez, too.
Back in my day, we had a note section at the end of the manual.
Yeah, I would actually say that Fez is maybe the most comparable game to The Witness that I can think of.
Yeah, but it's a single player Fez, where all the beautiful thing about The Witness is, like, nothing is, like, really spoilable. Even after this conversation, everything that is good about The Witness is still good to someone who is seeing it for the first time and figuring it out for the first time, and that there's nothing that, like with Fez, it was a community effort, and it feels like The Witness is super deep, but it's like all of that effort is a solitary thing that like you have to pace through and fight through to understand, rather than something just being so difficult that like you need to outsource it. Like the difficulty of The Witness is fantastic, where it's all doable. Like, I think anyone can really solve the puzzles once they give it enough time and mull it over a lot. But they still are challenging enough that later in the game, or the puzzles that get later on in each area, are not going to be something that remotely you figure out the first time you're looking at it. And sometimes you need to go away from the game for a little bit and come back and then look at it with a new set of eyes. And
yeah. And one of the things that I also really appreciate is that they don't try to go for some crazy, wacky ending or some like wild twist that suddenly changes everything. Because I think we have our fill of games that do that already. So it's kind of nice to just see something that has like a more simple, solitary ending to it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of shocking that The Witness never turns its tail on the line puzzle aspect of it, that there's not a like when you hear its line puzzles, you think like right away, and Jonathan Blow, you think right away that it is gonna have to like switch that and do some insane thing where suddenly it's not about line puzzles.
All the lines are veins. Yeah, and you're filling people with blood.
Something insane and stupid, or even change the nature of the game and completely away from line puzzles to something just different. But the what it manages to get out of basic line puzzles is unbelievable, and that it never abandons that it goes the whole distance with that is incredible. Also, maybe something we're not even saying is that it's a lengthy game. Like it's not like a 5-10 hour one sitting game at all. Like it is it's like a 40-hour, 50-hour thing. Like really...
And it's also, I think, $30 or $40.
Yeah, you really get a good price, like, worth it. Time yeah. to money investment.
And it's just so relaxing. It's something that you can invest any amount of time that you want at a given time. It's a game that you could sit down for 10 minutes and solve one puzzle, or maybe not even solve any puzzles, maybe just wander around and see what's going on. Or you could sit there and just play it for a whole day and not get through it. So that's the deal with The Witness, I think.
Yeah, that is definitely my second favorite of the year.
Well, that's good, because that really narrows us down. What about you, Sean? Give us a runner-up.
My runner-up?
Yeah, second place.
Of Overwatch?
Jonathan's second place prize.
Two runners up.
Okay, well, it's between, I'm pretty sure, Hyper Light Drifter and Dark Souls 3. I think those are the only two games that I played.
Nice. So you've got your list figured out then.
Wow, you just got to place them. You just got to figure out a placement for them.
Yeah, I've got a really tight top three list.
Nice.
A list so definitive of me and definitive of this year that I didn't even bother going to a top five. People want immediacy.
So it's a Dark Souls 3, Sean.
Gratification. They want short lists. This is Sean's BuzzFeed list. Overwatch, Dark Souls 3 is number two. No doubt about it.
Nice. So Dark Souls 3, you've played all the Dark Souls, right? You've played 1, 2, and 3.
I have played 1, 2, and 3. I have not played any of the downloadable content.
Yeah. I have not played
Bloodborne. I completed them all.
Yeah, because
I have not played Bloodborne.
And 2 is a lengthy game, and I have like a lot of secrets after the credits roll.
Well, when you play like me, they're all pretty lengthy. But I also played about half of Demon's Souls.
Yeah, and that's about as much as I wanted to play of Demon's Souls.
I'm right there.
That one I won't talk about today. I did like it. I won't talk about it too much.
Have you completed Dark Souls 3 at this point?
I have.
Did you go through the Dragon Airy Peak, like secret area?
I heard about that area when I was perusing the Dark Souls 3 wiki, but I never found it, and I didn't go through it. So there was an optional area, the Arch Dragon Peak, and I think there was another optional area tucked into the main game that I also didn't see.
But the thing that's so funny is that I think that the Arch Dragon Peak is maybe the coolest, definitely most aesthetically interesting area in the whole game, and it's tucked away like in the very back, and the only way to find it is to come across a specific gesture and perform that gesture at a specific area, and if you do that, a dragon will like come by and take you away to this other area of the game, which is far and away the best part of the game. So
yeah,
what you'd expect from a Dark Souls.
Fortunately, the way the game ends leaves you able to just play starting at your save. You know, you're allowed to just keep exploring, keep fighting, keep doing whatever you want if you're interested. So I could always go back and I would maybe look up how to get there. But that really is the most frustrating thing about the Dark Souls games. there is just something.
It's weird, right? I mean,
silly, so obscure to the point of like just literal invisibility and just nonsense that I never heard about.
There's just straight up walls in the game where, you know, you have to mash on.
Yeah, there's a wall that. Yeah, if you roll through this, the wall. If you roll into this wall, it disappears. That's bizarre. And I have to say, like, even though that is, it's not just my second favorite game of the year because I only played three games this year. I did really like it, and I do love Dark Souls. It was probably, it might have been my least favorite one. I mean, even though I was more comfortable with it than and less frustrated than when I played the first Dark Souls, the way it ended was just the same way that this, you know, you find this Arch Dragon Peak, like there was no ending. You know, I beat the last boss, I think, on my third try, which for me is maybe 10 times fewer tries than a lot of the other bosses. And yeah, there's no dialogue, there's no cutscene, there's no congratulations.
Yeah, there's multiple endings though, right?
There are multiple endings, and they are all cloaked under like such infinite darkness that like there was one alternate ending that I don't even know if I liked it, if I would have liked it based on the way that it moves the story. But I was approaching an alternate ending, and I'm not really sure what happened, but just nothing ever came of it. And there was really no way for me to figure out what I was supposed to do. I actually ended up, after beating the final boss, looking on the wiki for how to do this ending. It was with, this won't spoil it for people that haven't played the game, but it was with these things called like the Dark Sigils, I think. You okay. Allow yourself to be permanently like zombified, and your character is supposed to marry this NPC and become like a dark prince or princess alongside an NPC under the influence of this like character, this mysterious character that is in sort of like the main base. And I went like definitely halfway through that, and then I never found the next step. And I don't know if I blocked myself off from it or what, but the game is just ridiculous. You can't ask. I don't know. Maybe people, there's a lot to love. Maybe if you're so into it that you want to explore that stuff and you want to play the game two times, three times, read about it on the internet.
Yeah.
The experience is enough. I was bummed.
For me, the best way to enjoy Dark Souls is to just not look up anything. I stumbled across the Arch Dragon Peak, you know, because of the in-game messages that sort of tell you like what things are important. So, you know, I'm walking by the area that takes you to Arch Dragon Peak, and then I see gesture required ahead. And you see there's all these statues around the area of people doing like this special prayer gesture. So then when I came across it, I was like, oh, okay, this must be what I need to do something over here. And that's how I found it. And I guess that's how they expect you to find it. But I think that much like The Witness, Dark Souls is a game best experienced individually. Sort of your individual journey through the game and what you come across for good or bad, I think is the best way to experience it.
Yeah,
that's,
I agree.
That's the way that I play. I always want to just find everything out myself and have that exploration rather than looking up anything and then being able to go there and game it and do everything.
Yeah, because I'm not trying to like min-max. Like, that's not what I'm doing. That's not the game for that.
Yeah, for me, it's definitely the feeling in the atmosphere and just, I don't know, the way it tickles my imagination. And I think about it later in the day, even when I'm not playing, in a very different way than I think about Overwatch or other games with a linear narrative or competitive games. It's very unique.
Yeah. So tell me about your second runner up.
Hyper Light Drifter?
Yes.
Well, Kirby recommended this game to me, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And I couldn't resist because I was intrigued and taken by the pixel art He said it had great music, and it does, and it's short. And I think that the difficulty is really well done. It's a it can be a tough game at times, but it's very forgiving. When you die, you know, at a boss or at a part, you're not thrown back really far. You don't feel too frustrated. You just try again and go for it, and you get it. I'm not amazing at games, and I was definitely able to take this one down, like, without too much too many problems or any frustration. It is similar. It appeals to me. It's nothing like Dark Souls. I won't say that, but it does appeal to me in a similar way in terms of creating an atmosphere, creating like a world that is then doubled in size just by my imagination of what could possibly be going on sort of behind the scenes. It does a thing I think I talked about on our two episodes ago when we did the first half of the year podcast. I referred to Zelda as like the first series that did this for me, where it presents these NPCs that don't have too much to say and they're not doing too much, but somehow they have that one line or that one movement or that song is playing in that area that creates this whole like book of lore in your mind. And there are symbols and theme, there are motifs throughout the game that really are just really capturing. And I think add this really beautiful component that can be like the emotional aspect of the game that a lot of games don't have for me. And it's something that I definitely seek in games. And also Hyper Light Drifter just had really cool, tight action gameplay. It felt like I played it on a controller and there aren't a ton of buttons to use. It's like the sickest handheld game you could ever imagine. You know, you dash, you slash, you've got a gun, you've got a sword. There's a variety of enemies. The bosses are cool and tough and have kind of like the sorts of like elaborate attack patterns that you expect from action games, like maybe Dark Souls or a Devil May Cry or something. But yeah, the game is really cool. Haven't played anything like it before, I would say. If anything, it's what I wanted and would have appreciated more from perhaps a similar game. I don't know if you guys will agree with me, but another acclaimed game, Bastion.
Yeah, I like Bastion a lot.
Another action game with great music and just a lot of personality. And
are you saying it didn't Bastion more, didn't more suck direct you in the narrative, way that HLD did?
Bastion didn't take me the way Hyper Light Drifter did, but I just think that they have some really key differences, but I just thought of it now. It's just like, I'm surprised how much I heard about Bastion when it came out and how little I heard about Hyper Light Drifter. Maybe I'm a little bit more detached from like the internet and the forums than I was back then, but I think it has a similar appeal.
Yeah, I really like how in a lot of action games, I don't always feel like I'm great, and there's times where like I beat a boss or a challenging encounter, but do it in a sloppy way or a way that doesn't feel good, or like I get hit a lot and use a lot of potions or something and still manage to like slop out a win. And with Hyper Light Drifter, I felt like the challenge of the game is so right, and the tools in the game are so simple, and you never are getting really like, you get alternate types of like weapon of guns, but you never like they only like in minor ways change the way that you would use the gun. And you kind of just pick one that you like the best. But for the most part, you're just doing the same sword swings from moment one to the end. And you don't get, like, new abilities for the most part. Like, you get some, like, augmentations to movement. But you're not, but you're really not getting, like, complicated stuff. You're just swinging the sword and dashing. So because the game has so little in terms of mechanics, and it sets such a... a good difficulty, you really do. I really did feel like I understood how to play the game, and that when I beat bosses, it was because I understood the fight and I understand the mechanics, and I played it correctly rather than like slopping out a win and like using there's times in like Dark Souls, for example, where
you nailed it. Exactly. I was going to say Dark Souls, the developers don't know exactly what you're going to do or what to expect from you. There's so much variety. You can really cheese it, get lucky, feel like, you know, something just worked out for you. That happened to me plenty of times.
Yeah,
the simplicity of Hyperlight Drifter keeps it really tight.
There's times in Dark Souls where you like, there's like bullshit builds in Dark Souls, and then there's like items and power-ups that would help you more, or having lots of Estus Flask. So there's times where I've beaten Dark Souls bosses that it was like, it didn't feel great because I started out using Gold Pine Resin or something and like got in the boss's face and then got lucky with RNG pattern and like slopped out a win, I'm not playing the boss well and I'm getting slapped around a lot, but I have so many Estus Flasks that I'm like managing to like hold on despite like constantly getting hit by an attack that I'm like not learning how to dodge. And Hyperlight Drifter is really a game where like by the end of the game there's no question about whether or not you understand how to play the game, and the game is so like unforgiving but fair, and has so few tools. They know exactly how you were supposed to play this game because they don't give you options, so by the end of it you do feel like they've taken the gameplay as far as it could go, and that you understand it, and that's great. I think that is like a really cool thing in a video game.
Totally agree. Yeah, I mean, the good thing about Dark Souls is that its massive scale outscales my impatience and frustration with some of that silliness that comes up all too frequently for anyone who has played the game. But with Hyperlight Drifter, it's all condensed into a nice 6-hour experience, some nice soundtrack, some nice looks, good mystery, good characters that are all like visual. The game doesn't have any English in it. There's just some made up language for all the characters speak and in the story and stuff. It's all purely visual. Just really nice distilled.
James, I'm really excited to hear your third place, because I can't really think of what it would be at the moment.
Sure. So my third place game.
Wait.
What?
What is it, Sean?
What if we guessed? What if we both had one guess?
Go on. But each of you guess.
Oh no!
I'll tell you this.
Oh no!
It's not an expansion. It's not an expansion. So this is a game.
It's not Hearthstone.
That was fully released this year. So yeah, it's not Mean Streets of Gadget Zan. It's not Path of Exile.
Okay.
So what is it?
I think my journalist guess is like maybe Firewatch, and then my silly secret guess is not Stardew Valley. What are James games?
Monster That's you Hunter? Get two guesses. Okay, so
I get as many guesses as I want.
Okay, my journalist guess is Dishonored 2, and
I have
my
10 Gestus Flasks.
My silly pick is Monster Hunter Generations.
It's Monster Hunter Generations.
Oh, I got it.
And it's hard, you know, because I play Dishonored and I loved Dishonored, and Dishonored is a game that I put 30 hours into, can wholeheartedly recommend to anyone. But
so you're saying I got your fight was between Generations and Dishonored, and I picked them both. Ooh,
yeah, but
I know the James.
My pick is Monster Hunter Generations, and one of the reasons is, and it's a very personal reason, is just that I moved out this year, and one of the things that I really loved about my old house is that my old house was a place that people would congregate, so everybody would come over and they would all play video games, and one of the games that I played a lot of when I lived at my old place was Monster Hunter. Because my friend Alex and my friend John were both there all the time. They both played Monster Hunter. So I did too. And it was, you know, I just, It brings me good feelings. So
the nostalgia.
When
it brought you back.
When I went back to playing, So when I went back to playing Monster Hunter Generations, and I'm on my DS, I'm online, I'm on Curse, talking with John and Alex and grinding, and it made me feel at home. It made me feel like, you know, this move wasn't so different, that it didn't change as much as it actually did about my day to day. So Monster Hunter Generations is the thing that brought me that feeling. And I talked a lot about its gameplay last time. I don't know how many of the things that are different about this one are going to come with the series. I don't know if styles and stances are something that we're going to see once Monster Hunter 5 drops on the Nintendo Switch. Fingers crossed for that. But I dug it, and I am excited to play the next Monster Hunter Generations 2, which is actually the next Monster Hunter game coming out in March, hoping that one gets a Switch version. And yeah, probably not a big surprise to anybody who listens to the show thoroughly. That's what it is.
Okay. Can you guys... Wow. Similarly, you guys can get your two guesses for mine, I think.
Okay, well, Heaven's Ward didn't come out this year, did it?
No, it didn't.
No. So...
Then give me a moment.
I'm going to guess Abzu.
That is a close one, yeah.
That's crazy.
It's
I'm
not.
Trying to think about what did Kirby talk to me about a lot this year. I'll say one game that it isn't. It's not The Last Guardian.
It's not World of Warcraft Legion.
Whoa. It is not The Last Guardian. Oh, man, it's Last not, Guardian. I wish it were The Last Guardian, to be honest, for how much I love Team Ico and Shadow of the Colossus.
My next guess would be Titanfall 2.
No.
All
this
right.
is such a good
well,
year,
out.
Though, man.
Crazy. I don't
it's
know.
It's tough to like, pick.
That's Titanfall 2 isn't even... Titanfall 2 wouldn't be in my top 5, I think.
Oh, Kirby loved Doom. He talked about it a lot.
There we go.
Doom was
that's got to be it.
No.
All right, so we're done. What is it?
Kirby threw us a smoke screen by talking extensively and excessively about all the games he played this year, just in preparation for us to be stumped by
his
top
three. I think if you listen to the two podcasts we put out, that is pretty obvious, actually.
That it's inside?
No.
Damn it, then what?
But Doom is like my fourth favorite of the year, and I love Doom. And
Doom is the runner up.
Give us a hint.
I mean, let's see.
Give the audience a hint. I'm gonna pull out my Ask the Audience.
I can definitely say that this game will not be on a lot of top tens.
Street Fighter.
Yes.
Wait, that came out this year? I was about to say that, but then I was like, nah, that game is so old.
Street Fighter V.
That's a game that's not going to be on a lot of lists. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It is. It is. Oh.
You know what? My bad. I honestly thought that game came out like last year or earlier.
I just forgot.
It had just been patched recently or something. Because I don't play it, obviously.
No, that came out this year.
Okay. That's very you, man. I like that. You kind of stick with your identity. Your personality, you stay consistent.
Yeah, I really, I mean, I don't think Street Fighter would have been my game of the year were it not for its, or my even my third place, were it not for really good updates for characters, that DLC characters that came out that I really like a lot, for how amazing the tournament scene was this year, for how well it's been adopted to pro and competitive play, and how great those kind of storylines have been. It's been a game that I've played every week this entire year since it came out. It is a type of game that, like, I always like to have a fighting game. It is like such a mental strain and like somewhat of like a meditative process to a complete 1v1, like a chess match kind of, where all the rules are right there, that you know what the enemy is capable of, what you're capable of. and figuring out their best options and training the enemy to think in a certain way or to predict your movements and then switching it up and doing something differently to throw them off guard. And like all that stuff is something in fighting games that is nowhere else in video games.
I thought you were going to say that it was because your favorite, you got into cheese this year, and that your favorite character, Karen, has hair
that looks like
a bunch of nice fusilli pasta with a cheddar cheese on it.
All right.
I mean, that's
so,
another reason.
That is another reason.
And also just
the compared length of the content we're putting out this week is pretty good.
Yeah.
Just thinking about that. We covered a lot of ground.
Do you think we should charge for more for this expansion?
No, but
what are people paying for this episode? Is this one of our 10 or 15?
This is a premium
episodes?
Right here. To get the last parts of this, to get the parts where Mason's mic cut off, you have to pay. It's gonna be $5, or you can get them in double dollars.
And I gotta ask, did I get that figured out by the end?
Yes, yeah, so you got that figured out by the very beginning.
Nice, right on. I'm really excited for next week's episode because next week is predictions for 2017.
Can I throw one out there?
Where we predict
Zarya
each other's top
is going to get a good skin.
Yeah, well, save it for next week. That's just a taste.
Whoa.
What do you say we end this and go play some Overwatch?
Hell yeah. Bring us on home.
Okay. So that's...
Play the Overwatch theme song.
We can't.
That's something about Overwatch that isn't memorable at all. It's the music.
What are you talking about? That opening theme? Are you kidding me? The menu music?
Probably wouldn't recognize it if you played it for me in both ears.
Wrongzo. I'm not going to hum it right now.
This has been WTDG Podcast. You can find us on WTDGpodcast.com, on Twitter at WTDG Podcast, and on iTunes, where you can rate, comment, and subscribe to the show.
Thank you, Ryan Galloway, crying for the use of your music. We use Revive as the intro and the outro off the new album, Beyond the Fleeting Gales. You can find them at their Run for Cover Bandcamp.
Yeah, and if you're in New York City as we're recording, you can find them at Webster Hall playing a show with Me Without You and Modern Baseball.
So you
others.
Either did or you didn't.
Either you went or you didn't. I bet at least one person listening to this went. Right, Joe Jalbert? No, you probably didn't go.
Wow, what a call out.
And I would say if you're interested in making macaroni and cheese with Karen's Fuzzilli famous pasta this holiday season for you and yours, recommend a nice cheddar as well as a Gruyere. If you're looking for a non-pasta-based cheese exploration, why not try raclette? It's Karen approved.
I mean, Karen is like super rich, so... The idea that Karen would be into some crazy wine and cheese pairings is not far off base.
And she's Swiss, right?
No. I think Karen's... I actually don't know her nationality. She might be like...
She's Swiss.
English?
I don't feel like... No, I don't think... I don't know if she's English. She might be Japanese, but has a name like Karen for some reason. Oh, she's blonde.
White, blonde, and Japanese.
I mean, it could be like a half Japanese thing.
Have you guys heard of Terrace House?
No. But so I have from watching... from my brother and me, of course.
Huh?
I searched Karen on Google. Like, why the fuck would I think that that would give me the results that I wanted?
I started watching Terrace House, and it's ridiculous. It's because it is a Japanese reality TV show. And the
Well, her name is Karen Kanzuki, so...
Yeah, She probably belongs in Terrace House.
Yeah, but she could be married. Oh, she's
Japanese. She's all Japanese right here.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean her Swiss parents weren't on a Japanese vacation.
That's the deal with games.
Kanzuki Ryu. Total victory. That's her likes. She only has one like, and it's total victory. Her dislikes, middle class ideals, and people who do not fulfill their obligations.
Her tagline is, I'll show you the divide in our class. She seems obsessed with, like, these, like, classist remarks.
She is. That's her whole thing, is that she's richer than you and then beats you to death.
And then Spin kicks her way to the Swiss Alps.
That's it.
Do not be away over long.